Smackdown.
Today on Fanboy Smackdown, Episode 7, Jerks. Tony and Tony describe the second half of Kevin Smith's film career in this two-part series.
Hello and welcome to the Fanboy Smackdown podcast. This is Tony.
And this is Tony.
And this evening, we're discussing the other Kevin Smith movies. In our last episode, we discussed the Jersey Trilogy, Clerks, Mallrats, and Chasing Amy. And tonight we are going to talk about Dogma, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, and Jersey Girl.
I think it'll be actually much more of a challenge to put it all into whatever, I guess, 45 minutes or something, because we have twice the material, I think, in terms of, you know, how much needs to be discussed as far as the content of each film.
Oh, absolutely. I honestly think we could have talked a little bit longer last time. In thinking back about the discussion we had, I think we shorted Mallrats a little bit.
We probably did. But I think we probably could have spent the whole thing just talking about Chasing Amy, too, at the same time. So, I mean,
we could just have a...
Mallrats is great. Just thought I'd like to throw that in there. So, yes, all right, yes. We've talked about it.
We showed some love for the rats. All right. So let's just go in order. Let's just talk this out in order. We've got Dogma. You know, last time we did a little bit of research and we had a little more information on the releases of the films. I'm trying to remember exactly when this was released.
99.
Was it 99?
Yeah.
Was it that late?
Yeah.
I know that I was already a fan when this was in production. I had actually read a copy of the script online before the movie came out.
You cheater.
Yes. Yes, I did.
No fanboys here.
No. No. Not going to be spacked down. Not me. No.
No, just actually, wait. Your time will come.
Yeah. Oh, I have no doubt. Yeah. Well, I guess that said, we have a lot of new listeners. Let's just go ahead and say that.
Yeah. Hey,
right
we
now.
Really want to thank Brad at News Askew, and I guess in general Kevin Smith, because it's his website.
Yeah,
it is the official Smith website. So thank you for giving us the time of day, putting us out there on your news site, and we've enjoyed every minute of it, man. We've been like checking. Oh my God, look how many more downloads we have. Oh my Lord.
That's exactly how we sound when we check it out.
That's right. I'm not going to my job today. I'm gonna sit here and check the stats.
Hey, three more downloads. It's been 5 minutes. Three more. Cool.
By the way, I believe my LSAT score may have suffered today as a result of the sudden view askewness of the film. No, I'm just talking.
All right. So, seriously though, thank you and welcome to everyone who is joining us from News Askew. You're more than welcome to hang out, have a beer with us. Because God knows that's what we're doing.
I'm drinking Shinerbach, by the way.
And I've got a Killian's tonight. So, where were we? Oh, Dogma. Yeah,
Dogma.
That's the one. Yeah, this was a cool film. I liked a lot about it. The story itself, questioning faith, it held an overall theme. And the nature of faith as it related to what are you doing?
I'm rearranging my drinks. Around. I've got to be ready. You know, I got to be able to take, you know, water, soda, beer, water, soda, beer. All right, go ahead.
All right. So we've got I'm blanking.
Here's my general take on the film.
All right.
The film is incredibly interesting. Probably one of the most original movies I've ever seen. And I could watch it many, many times over. Mm-hmm. I do enjoy it. That being said, I don't believe the film works. I believe it has a lot of flaws. I think outside of Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, which is a film that's made for the fans, primarily.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It is his weakest film in terms of storytelling in terms of how the story comes across to the audience. That being said, I do like it a lot. I mean, I just think it's interesting as hell, but no pun intended. But I don't think it works. It has a lot of characters.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get a lot of individual face time. Right. We don't get to know them well. There are a lot of things. There are a lot of times where just when they're on a roll, for me, they somehow, and I understand this is the point of the film, but it didn't seem to sync very well. But they'll somehow have the time to like sit back and like have a 20-minute conversation about like, you know, whatever.
But dude, it had a poop monster.
You're right. You're right. I mean, if every movie, if Scorsese probably would be like,
every movie needs
find
a poop
me
monster.
A poop monster. This Aviator film is just not working out. No, but I and actually that's a good example in that. The film is working really well at that point.
Yeah.
And I don't have anything against the poop monster. I just didn't think it was funny. I don't know why. Yeah. I just thought it was dumb. I just was like, you know, like, this movie's so funny and interesting up to this point, and then we have to spend 10 minutes.
It was a cheap joke. It really was a cheap joke. And I mean, granted, that it's not like the rest of his jokes are highbrow.
Well, no.
I thought it went a long way for not... for not much of a punchline.
Exactly. Yeah, it didn't deliver.
I think where this film really suffered in terms of the story is, and do a little bit of research, it was a script that was written prior to Clerks. He wrote this before he made Clerks.
Oh, okay.
It's been one that has been with him for a long time. Another thing said is it's a long script. There is a lot that's been cut out of that movie. Watch the DVD extras, and there's something like 60-some minutes of, and I'm sure all of our new friends will correct me exactly, but there's a whole lot of film that was left cut, a whole lot of story that was left on the cutting room floor. And I think you missed a lot of the characterization from that.
Probably.
That said, I've watched every minute of the extra footage, and it definitely made for a much quicker movie. It would have really slowed the movie down to have a lot of that in. I mean, granted, it would have made it a 2.5-3-hour long movie.
There are other flaws that really... have nothing to do with the story itself.
Right, right.
One of them is, I think the main protagonist is not a good actress. Like, I have trouble believing anything she says the entire film.
And I don't know if it's that she's a good actress, is that I don't know if she had a problem with the script, if she had a problem with the director. I really can't speak to whether or not she's a good actress. I don't think that the acting ability that she showed in this film was up to what it could have been.
Yeah.
I would have rather seen Janine Garofalo do this.
I think What's His Name said that on the commentary.
Yeah.
What's His Name? Kevin Smith. I'm sorry, everybody.
They're going to hunt you down.
Yeah, they're going to find me and smack me down. but yeah, I think he said that, didn't he, in the commentary?
Yeah, he did. I would have rather seen her do it. I would rather see Joy Lauren Adams do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can completely see her in that role. I think they were broken up by that time, so I don't know if that would have flown.
Oh, is that a...
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Good job, buddy. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. He was hitting that.
All right. All right. Yeah, that's ready to go, Kev. All right. As far as Dogma goes, the subject matter itself, I'm Catholic.
As am I.
All right. I didn't really have a problem with anything. It was like,
I mean, I understood. Like, I understood everything that they were. I understood everything that they were talking about. It's not like I felt I needed a primer for any of the information they were tossing out.
Actually, I did. I don't really understand the indulgence thing. I mean, we never talk about it. It might be is it a pre-Vatican II thing? I don't hardly know anything about it.
I don't know. I didn't look it up.
I mean, I just was like, whatever this has to do with Catholicism, has never affected me,
right?
In any way, shape, or form. And I just was kind of like, you know, where. I guess I just didn't. I just had to accept the plot as what it was,
right?
Because I just was like, it made no sense to me. I was like, I've never.
I mean, you had a poop monster.
Well, that's true.
For God's sake, I know. You know, you've got a walking, talking pile of crap,
right?
And so let's just assume we have plenary indulgence. I mean, you have angels walking around,
and the whole crux of the plenary indulgence thing is that. It's a human belief, and that is why it was going to upend everything, because the humans put more faith in it than putting the faith in the ideas that, you know, God was putting forth.
The title of the movie.
Right.
The title of the movie is Dogma. The Tony's definition of dogma is the human rules of the church. It's not the law of God. It's the law of man. It's the rules we make up as a church, not as a faith.
Right.
And it's a matter of religion, not faith. And I mean, that's where the title of the movie comes in. That's the conflict, is dogma versus faith.
Yeah. I mean, no disagreement there.
You shouldn't.
All right.
Good talk, guys. we could go a lot more into the specifics of it. And I don't know that there's a lot more that we can add to what's already out there.
Yeah, the film is probably his most discussed film, easily.
Oh, it's still brought up as a controversial film. You know, it was seeing newspapers with the release of the Da Vinci Code. It was getting mentioned again in newspapers because of the Da Vinci Code.
That's
the controversy that brought out.
That's amazing to me because, once again, and we did a podcast on the Da Vinci Code, if anyone wants to check it out. It's at fanboysmackdown.com. But anyway, we did a podcast on it, and one of the things was we were discussing how, you know, Dan Brown purports, you know, it basically to be all based on historical fact, you know, which is from which where the controversy arrives,
mm-hmm.
arises, actually. Whereas, contrarily, Dogma doesn't purport to be anything other than a comedy. I don't understand how people could be like, oh,
it's
my
got
Lord.
Jay and Silent Bob in it, for God's sake. I know. I mean, it's not.
And they're prophets, for crying out loud. I don't think that's canonically correct.
No, they were makers of profit.
Right.
Which was the lovely play there.
Got it.
What did you think of some of the side characters who were not the main characters, but you had some decent talent in there? You had Jason Lee.
Well, Jason Lee's character was actually very important. He was not one of the characters that I thought didn't belong.
Right.
I thought Salma Hayek's character, I really liked that one scene, but outside of that, I mean, you know, we didn't really need the character, I didn't think.
She was a character that played to plot points more than a character that was to be fully developed. It was a character that pushed the plot along.
Yeah.
In a couple of key points, some of which ended up in the cutting room floor. really, she has what, two functions in the movie. One is the scene with the driver, and the other is at the end where they realize the identity of John Doe Jersey. Is that right? Yeah.
But how does she facilitate either of those scenes necessarily? I'm not saying she doesn't, but why is she essential to doing those scenes?
It was a plot device. She was a plot device.
Okay.
And she was used a couple of times in the movie.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not saying that it was a necessary character. I'm saying she was a plot device. It moved the story. That was really the only purpose she served.
That was the only...
And she looked hot.
Oh, that's true. That's why that one scene is very important. The scene where she's, you know...
Looking hot.
You know, dancing around. It's a good scene.
Mm-hmm.
But the other characters, the hockey guys, you know, why couldn't that all be Jason Lee? I think that would have been much more interesting. If Jason Lee was running around, he bonks the guy over the head in the beginning of the movie, and then, you know, he's directly taking everyone on. It would have been way more interesting in the sense that we would have seen more Jason Lee, and he would have had wittier dialogue. And
my understanding with Jason Lee, if I'm remembering my mythology correctly, for the second Holy Trilogy, Jason Lee was not available for as much filming of this, and I believe the role that Matt Damon played was supposed to be Jason Lee.
Okay.
I believe it was supposed to be Jason Lee and Ben Affleck in those roles.
Okay.
And he ended up in the role he was in because of time constraints. He just didn't have as much time available. So it was a much smaller role, but very well played.
Right.
I thought he did a spectacular
He did.
He was just loving every minute of it. It was so obvious.
The movie is fun. The movie is a lot of fun to watch.
Oh, it's a blast. It is a blast to watch.
It's a great movie.
I think the people that took it seriously as a statement of faith, same thing, you know, with the Da Vinci Code. It's a movie. You know, it's a movie.
Yeah,
It's fiction. It's got a poop monster.
Why don't you elaborate on, and I saw this in the evening for Kevin Smith.
Right.
Elaborate on the protest. By Kevin Smith.
Yeah. Well, he actually protested the film himself. He saw that they were protesting the film in his hometown, so he went down there and protested right along with them. You know what? I'm not going to waste this story. I'm not going to give it away. It's worth seeing
on
Evening with Kevin Smith. I won't do the story any justice.
Another good story
He's a masterful. See, I can't even say the damn words.
One beer, folks.
Not even a full one. He's a masterful storyteller, not just with his writing, but he just tells a great story in person. I've seen him, and I mentioned that last time.
That show is incredibly entertaining.
Oh, it's a blast. And the second one comes out later this summer.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
Evening Harder. An Evening with Kevin Smith, too. Evening Harder.
There's another story ties into his meeting Prince and the Prince's requests of him that is tied to Dogma, which is interesting. And it's related to the subject of religion. Very interesting. That was probably my favorite story of them all, was the Prince story.
It's some great stories. There's some really great stories. His conflict with Mr. Burton. Now did that have the information relating to some of the backstory about Superman Lives?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
When the Superman movie before it was Superman Returns, when it was still being called Superman Lives, and Kevin Smith wrote a treatment of that script, and I've read it, and I have to say, as a Superman fan, I'm kind of glad that it's not getting made.
Well,
and
the constraints he was forced to write it under were
absolutely
extremely odd.
Yeah, I mean, I read it, and knowing those constraints, it was obvious that he earned a paycheck because he wrote the script.
Right.
But I hope he wasn't seriously thinking that the draft that he turned in was going to be the final draft.
Well, I don't think he really, well, at least the way he tells it, you kind of feel like he's like, who cares at this point? By the time he gets to dealing with all of the strange requests of him for that script regarding the content of the story, I think by the time he had it with that guy.
Absolutely.
By the time the end of that thing rolled around, so I don't think he was too... I wouldn't think. I don't want to speak for you, Kevin, but I wouldn't think he was too hurt by it. But anyway, we can go to the next film.
Yeah, let's go on.
Let's strike back.
Yeah, let's jump forward 2 years, 2001. And I do remember this one because I was all over the internet looking for this one, you know. I was all about reading the message boards and really collecting information on this. I actually went to Wizard World Chicago in August of 2001. Had the opportunity to sit in on a Kevin Smith panel discussion. I mentioned that in the last podcast. Got a chance to see this film, I believe it was the week before it was released. They did a charity viewing of it. You got to pay, I think it was $10 for a ticket, and I went up to Chicago with a couple of guys. We're in the St. Louis area, in case anyone wasn't aware of that. So me and a couple of guys drove up to Chicago, spent the weekend, went to the con, got to meet Jason Mewes, got to meet Walt Flanagan, and a couple of the other guys. Got to ask a question of Kevin Smith after the viewing of Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
What'd you ask him?
I believe it was something, and I'm trying to remember specifically, and I was curious about his writing technique, so I was trying to ask him questions about that. I think it was something really inane, like how long did it take you to write the script? And he's like, dude, you've seen the film, it didn't take that long. So, yeah. So, I mean, I was trying to be a little more serious about it, but his answer was like,
right,
fine, you know, that's cool. That was a cool answer. I was a little disappointed in the film. I don't know what I was expecting. I liked it. I don't want to say I didn't like it, because I did. I laughed my ass off through it. But at the same time, he had already made this same movie.
Yeah.
Or he made pieces of this movie a couple of times over already.
Yeah.
And I wasn't getting anything new. I mean, it felt like recycled jokes in some instances. There was some new stuff. Will Ferrell was great.
Will Ferrell was awesome in that movie.
The pop culture references are great. I mean, you need a damn scorecard to keep track of everything. Everything from even Will Ferrell's character, the name of his character, Marshall Willenhauly, which anybody who might be familiar with the old Land of the Lost, there's a part of the song where they're telling about the characters, and it's Marshall, Will, and Holly.
Oh my gosh.
Marshall, Will, and Holly.
I didn't know anything about that.
And if you look closely at his uniform, he's in Sleestak County. And Sleestaks were the monsters from Land of the Lost.
Oh.
So
Yeah, I don't know anything.
I mean,
about
the pop culture was all over the place. I mean, yeah, everything from The Fugitive to Land of the Lost. I mean, it was just all over.
I thought maybe I just didn't identify with it because I wasn't enough of a fan that I had pretty much watched all these films for this podcast.
Right.
And I got them all from you. And I just was like, you know, oh, you know, I guess.
Dude, you're outing yourself as a poser.
Yeah, I'm a poser, everyone. smack down the poser fanboy. I just watched the films, and it was just kind of like, well, I guess I just don't get it because I'm not on the inside of this thing. I thought some scenes were funny, but I just was like, well, not on the inside of this thing. I accept it. You know, it's not my kind of... I mean, it felt to me like other comedies, which I appreciated. You know, I thought it was funny, but I guess it just never came together for me.
It was... For lack of a better word, it was masturbatory. He was stroking off the fans.
Right.
The people who are fans of this movie, not to say anything bad. I mean, he was giving us what we wanted.
Right.
he gave us exactly what we wanted.
Well, I mean, that's why, I mean, he knows or knew that the characters had run their course to a certain extent. He was never going to revisit those characters.
Right.
Until recently. So, that makes sense. I mean, he wanted to give them a big send-off in a way.
Absolutely.
So, why not? Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, I mean, it was his Cheech and Chong movie.
Yeah.
It really was. It was a Cheech and Chong road movie. It was Cannonball Run. It was, I mean, it was so many of those movies all rolled into one. It was a hell of a lot of fun to watch. I'm not going to say it wasn't. But it was, it really didn't say a whole lot more than the internet pisses me off.
Right.
I mean, that was the only thing I got out of it.
The thing I liked the most about it was Good Will Hunting 2. That was great. Like, Moon I Raper. Loved that.
Moon Raper.
Yeah. That was good, too. And that Jason Lee and Ben Affleck both show up twice as different people.
I thought that was great.
That was good stuff,
Masterful.
Too.
Masterful.
So.
The scene with Affleck and Damon when they're doing their acting exercises.
Those guys are great. And Gus Van Zandt's in it.
Counting his money.
Yeah.
Just
and don't they say something effective like, he's like, I'm busy, and they're like, what an artist, or what a genius, or something like that.
Yeah.
And we should have a Gus Van Zandt podcast, but we can talk about that another off.
Sure.
Off audio, but we should, because there's some good films in there.
Yeah, I mean, I had a blast watching it. I had a great time. I saw it a couple times in the theater. I own it. I've watched it a couple times on DVD. But honestly, if I'm gonna be completely honest, I think it was the weakest film.
I would agree. I mean, but that being said,
just because it doesn't, there's no way it can stand on its own. There's
exactly.
No way for someone to watch this as their first film. Unless they're an absolute culture maven. I mean, you have to really know your shit.
I think it can stand on its own, but I think you still miss a lot. I mean, it is funny without... Because I'll tell you what, I didn't get all the jokes. There's no way. I mean...
Well, you have to... I mean, you have to have been, you know, jacked into a television set for the last 35 years to get...
Well, not only that, but even if you were someone that... Let's say you didn't know Jay and Silent Bob were. You'd seen none of the other films. You go in, you watch the movie. You might think, hey, this is a pretty good Dumb and Dumber type flick. You know,
absolutely.
Like, it would survive on its own as a type of film like that.
It was a Cheech and Chong movie in that respect.
So it was fair.
I think
probably his weakest film.
I think as comedies go, it's on the high end.
Really?
Of comedies. If you're just looking at Kevin Smith
films, of his comedies, or
not of his comedies, I'm just saying, you know, Jackass comedy films in general. I would put it up on the high end, because there's still a lot of intelligence.
I wouldn't give it that much credit, but I mean,
I think there's a lot. I mean, if you're gonna stand it up to other movies that are loaded with pop culture references, like the Scary Movies. It blows them away.
Well, yeah, but nobody said they were on the high end of comedy films.
You know what, though? If you're going to look at box office totals, you'd think those movies were just made of gold.
Okay.
You'd think they were printed on gold-laced
film. When I'm thinking high end, I'm thinking, and probably people will be emailing as soon as I say these names, that's not a high-end comedy film. Tommy Boy, Happy Gilmore, even older films, Caddyshack. Groundhog Day. Those to me are.
Well, those
like,
are those are those. You're talking top floor. Some of them.
Some
Boy,
of them. You're like
Tommy Boy.
I think Tommy Boy is hilarious, man. It's so funny.
We'll.
Plus,
we'll
I lived in Ohio, so I get all the inside jokes in that movie.
We'll,
there weren't any. Anyway,
we'll work on that later. yeah, I mean, I liked it, but It doesn't stand out to me as a movie that you point to and say, you gotta see this one.
I agree. I would have to say, of the type of films like that he did the best on Mallrats. I mean, it's most like Mallrats.
Yes.
In that it's kind of a throwaway comedy.
Yes.
And that Mallrats is just way better, you know, just on every level.
I don't disagree.
So.
I don't disagree. Let's completely change course and go completely off track with Kevin and talk about Jersey Girl. Because this movie is not anything he's done before.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, I think it's his best movie.
Right.
I think this is his best movie. And then after that, Chasing Amy is his best movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think the two are all that dissimilar. I mean, in terms of the actual content of what they are talking about, they are very dissimilar. But I think in terms of the overall thematic tone, they are not at all dissimilar.
No. No. You're right. They're similar in tone, as is Clerks with that. I mean, there's a lot of similarities you can pull in with that.
I don't think that Clerks is the same type of film as either Chasing Amy and Jersey Girl. Because I think Chasing Amy and Jersey Girl, and I could be wrong.
No, you know what? You're right. Because Clerks is more, a little more slice of life. It's a little more a day in the life kind of deal.
The films Chasing Amy and Jersey Girl are dealing with man's incompetence in relationships, essentially. And it is the same guy playing both incompetence, and he is very good at it. He does a good job again in Jersey Girl, Ben Affleck. And even though it's father-daughter versus...
Well, and not just father-daughter. It's also father-son as an adult.
Right.
It's him being squeezed in at both ends.
Yeah.
He has to deal with his father as an adult. He's an adult, but he's still his father. And he's got to deal with the fact that he's a father, a single father, raising his young daughter. And the scenes with the two of them were just magical. I thought they did a great job.
Casting. Now, who are you talking about? The father, son, or father, daughter?
All of them.
All of them. Yeah.
I mean, the scenes. It was great.
When you were just saying that, you were talking about the George Carlin Affleck rapport.
George Carlin Affleck, George Carlin, Raquel, and Affleck. I mean,
all of the acting was top shelf. There's no doubt about it.
And they all had they all had great chemistry.
All of the acting in that and Chasing Amy have the chemistry that it requires. And I don't feel sometimes the only real weakness I find in his movies that sometimes they're saying their lines because they know their lines.
Right.
And not that they're not saying, they're not that they're not acting them out, but it sounds like they're talking to an imaginary actor versus the one sitting right next to them.
Right.
You know, which happens, I think, in a lot of his movies.
Especially Clerks.
Dogma. I mean, I think it happens a lot in Dogma, too. I think, you know, Linda Fiorentino is talking like...
Oh, she's... I mean...
You know, it's like, hey, that's, you know, I think Rufus we've already the 13th Apostle.
Off.
I mean...
I think we've already written her off.
You know...
We've given her the smackdown.
Yeah. But yeah, Jersey Girl and Chasing Amy have real chemistry. Jersey Girl probably... even more believable chemistry in the sense that it feels like this could happen to you.
It feels like you're peeking in their window.
Yeah.
I mean, these people feel real. There's two scenes that I look at that movie and I feel for Ben Affleck as a father. And as a human being, and one is when he catches his daughter and the little boy,
right?
You know, and he's sitting there looking at them, and his knee is just bouncing, and it was just such a great little thing. And you could tell he's trying to be serious. He doesn't know what the hell he's going to say. He's nervous. He just doesn't know what to do. But it's a situation you find yourself in. I mean, as a parent, you get hit by these moments that you don't know what to do. This is brand new to you.
Right.
You're expected to be an expert at all this stuff. And you just fly, you know, you're flying by the seat of your pants on most of it. And you just hope you're making the right decisions. And you could tell he's just nervous. He is just dying because he just doesn't know what's going to come out of his mouth next. I thought it was just a great character moment. The other one is toward the end of the film when he snaps.
Yeah.
And he yells at her.
Yeah.
And
you know, that was a great moment.
It was painful to watch. Yeah. But it felt real. I mean,
and in the commentary, they're talking about if it was a devil child or something. I can't remember what they were talking about.
Yeah.
It totally upends the moment.
The moment of the film, yeah.
Which I thought I'd mention. But, woo, or something, yeah. Whatever they're making
They were going all kinds of crazy with that
but,
one.
But yeah, that is a good moment in the film, man. And yeah, it feels real. And I know there were some reviews of it I was reading where some of the effect of, well, he uses certain cliches and the film is maybe over cliched. And to that I would say, if you're trying to make a film about that subject matter, shouldn't you mind those cliches? I mean, if you're not minding the fundamentals of that kind of picture, then what picture are you going to end up with?
I mean, right, right. I mean, you're not going to make a chick flick and not make two people be in love
right
at some point in the movie,
or that the father's not going to rush back to get to his daughter. I mean, maybe if this was daring film, he would just say screw it,
and at that point the only way you can salvage that film is he gets the job, walks out of the building jumping up and down, and gets hit by a bus.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's no reason the character should do anything but go back.
Absolutely.
You know,
he has to
vindicate his relationship.
Revelation. An uncredited cameo by Will Smith.
Yeah.
I thought that was just awesome.
Yeah.
He, I mean, just a stand-up performance, really great.
It was the one moment that I felt the film was a bit surreal.
Yeah.
That I didn't, I was like, all right, we're delving a little bit into Fantasia here, but it was okay. I mean, yeah. I went with it.
I mean, it's maybe sometimes you need the spark, and you get a big frickin' spark.
I mean, it's a deus ex machina. I mean, it's essentially.
I mean,
it's like all of Kevin's movies, man, where Silent Bob comes in. Only this time, it's Will Smith.
Absolutely.
And Will Smith comes in and basically says how it
lays
is.
It out to him.
Yeah. So,
man, I wish I was at home playing with my kids. You know, who's the smart one?
Right.
I mean, it's a great moment in the film. I would love to see Kevin Smith's original script for this, because knowing a little bit of the lore, that role was originally supposed to be played by Bruce Willis.
Really?
Yes. Yes. I can only imagine there would have been a scene where someone said something about an asteroid, being stuck on an asteroid with you.
Right.
You have to make that reference. You can't not.
Well, Liv Tyler was actually in that film, too.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, I mean, you'd have to make the reference.
I couldn't get through that movie, by the way.
Really?
No, man, I was bored out of my mind. I don't want to offend any Jerry Bruckheimer fans out there. I was bored.
But we're not talking about him right now. Let's finish this podcast before
it was in the realm of discussion. I'm smacking down fanboys left and right.
I did want to say that that I did kind of force the issue of us getting this podcast out at this time with Jersey Girl, because I really wanted to make a mention of how much I enjoyed the aspect of the father-child relationship, both as a father relating to a child and a father relating to an adult child. And this weekend's Father's Day.
Right.
So, you know, it was a little bit forced on my part. I'll admit that. But, you know.
Hang out with your dads, kids.
And this was.
Fanboy Smackdown.
And I think Kevin would go with this. It's advice from him, too.
Yep.
He lost his dad in the making of this movie. And right at the end of the film.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Right at the end of the film, there's a. When the screen goes black, there's a picture of his dad.
You're right.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. He, his dad actually did get to see a final cut of the film.
Oh, good.
And, you know, he always said that this was for his dad.
I thought
And for his daughter.
Yeah, that's what I always thought.
It's a little of both, and you can tell it's for both.
Yeah.
It's and I you know, I just wanted to make mention of it.
He talks about how George Carlin really embodied certain elements of his dad's character. Yeah. Like, and I guess that's what he was going for. I don't see, man. I mean, I know it was just derided in the press because of the J-Lo Ben thing, but even that being said, how does George Carlin not get nominated for, like, a Best Supporting Actor award or something? I mean, he was phenomenal in that movie.
He was great. He was absolutely perfect. And just the aspect of being the crusty, old street worker, but still a caring father in his own way, and much more so, I mean, you could tell his heart just melted for that little girl. You know, he did everything for her.
Yep.
And you know, that's what grandpas do, man.
I want to say at the end of the film, I was curious. I knew the song Jersey Girl was going to be in the film. But I was curious whether he was going to use the Bruce Springsteen version or the original by Tom Waits. And he used the Springsteen version. Well, yeah. I guess he had to do that because Springsteen's from Asbury Park.
Oh, but yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can't not.
It's a Tom Waits original, everybody. Just a little bit of trivia for you there.
Yeah, the music fanboy has to come out and say his piece every once in a while.
I love them both dearly, man. Springsteen and Waits. That's where it's at.
Yeah. So this concludes, I think, unless you have anything further to add, I think this concludes our...
Not at all. Happy Father's Day, Dad.
Yep. Happy Father's Day, Dad. And to anyone else who is a father, whether you know it or not, happy Father's Day. That was probably pretty wrong. So. That's okay.
It's all right. This is the View Askew podcast.
Absolutely.
Edition. Next week we'll be tackling new material. Well, we don't even know what that is yet.
I don't think we know what that is yet. We'll figure that out as we go. We will have a second feed this week. We've gotten quite a bit of feedback. Some of it from some of our new listeners. We got some voicemail that we're going to be going through. But you'll either be hearing this just before or just after
We're really organized here at the Fanboy Smackdown.
We have no clue what the hell is going on. So if you see another feed, don't delete it. It's not a mistake. We are actually going to have a little bit of feedback there. Again, thank you for listening, and thanks also to all the View Askew folks, all the News Askew people that have added, and everybody else who's been with us the whole time. Please keep listening. If you have any suggestions, if you have anything you'd like for us to
send it our way,
chew on until it's little bits of nothingness, let us know.
Steve knows it gets done. You send us information on the 1938 Russian propaganda film, we will talk about it.
Yes, we will. We did. Episode 5. And before we leave, we should probably mention how folks can get a hold of us.
Right.
FanboySmackdown@gmail.com is the email address. The phone number, do you remember it yet? 206-339-FBST, FBSD, Fanboy Smackdown. That would be 206-339-3273. Also, I am available on Skype. You can Skype
Amen,
me.
Brother.
And we can chat there. You can tell me how wrong I am. That's cool. I think that just about does it.
All right, guys. We're out of here.
See you next time.
Snooch to the nooch.